Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Roper Report podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. My name is Rich Spate and I'm joined down the line this evening by Chris Wynn from Sheffield.
All right, Rich. Good to be back.
Aye, yeah. Not too, well, I am disappointed, but you know, I'm not in pain from the weekend, from Sunday. You know, we did
I was,
well.
I was yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I was just in pain physically yesterday. I mean, the hangover, I'm so close to 40 that hangovers can now last 24 hours. And we're also joined from the Northeast by Gav Henderson, our editor. How are you this evening, Gav?
I'm good, mate. I'm very good. Well, I'm on the back end of COVID, so I'm recovering and I might cough a bit. But
yeah, that's what I was wondering about. Are you going to be like, you know, collapsing in the corner halfway through?
No, virus, I might get out of breath by talking. Like, I haven't done a lot of talking this week to try and recover. But no, I'm all right otherwise.
Well, hopefully you won't be wheezing away as we're banging on.
Depends how good this mic is, really, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It picks up everything.
We've got a good amount to talk about. I haven't got a set agenda, but obviously we've all been distracted, quite happily distracted by the Euros for the last month and a bit. Chris, what was your take on, I'm going to go with the tournament overall, because, you know, we've talked endlessly about England, but what about the tournament overall? Was it a good break from kind of League One dross football?
It was. It was really weird not to see people hump at 40 yards. It was really, like, I was watching it. It was when even in the final, Italy England, I was watching it with my little one, and I was just telling them to watch how they passed it. Because, I mean, I got him to watch Sunderland last season, poor lad, you know, I mean, form of child cruelty, but he just got bored of some of them matches, and you could see his eyes popping out of his head for the game, like between two good sides, because England, Italy just popping it about, one touch pass, completely different game, innit?
It is unbelievably good tournament, I thought. Like, there's been some crap tournaments recently, but that was something else. Did you enjoy it, Gav?
Oh, yeah, unreal. Like you say, there was just so many good moments, good games. And for once, it was nice to support a team that can actually carry through in a game, like, and win it and look decent doing it, which I'm not used to. And also quite nice to support the same team as me mag mates again, which is the one thing that comes around every time there's a tournament, is we all get together and support the same team. So it's not brilliant. I think England, wow, to be honest, were fantastic throughout. And I don't think I'm meant to support a team that wins anything substantial, because everything was lined up for England to win the tournament, and we still managed to knack it up. So, but I don't feel too disheartened, actually, because I think we did as much as we could, really. It was, you know, the best team won on the day with Italy, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. The quality of football all the way through the tournament, from almost from start to finish, was out of this world. I enjoyed the first game as much as I did the last game, or probably more than I did the last game, because I didn't care. It won the first game. Yeah, it was wonderful. It was wonderful to see the variation of tactics and the different approaches. And as a lot of people have said, it was great to see teams winning out over individuals, like proper teams who had good tactics, good togetherness, good spirit, were the teams that went far, as well as the teams that had home advantage as well, as many of my neighbours around here in Wales have been making me very aware of the thousands of miles that their team had to track over to Baku twice, I think, there and back. But anyway, it was a fantastic summer of fun and proper good football. But unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about a League One side that struggled to make much progress over the last few years in Sunderland. So, I mean, we're into pre-season. They've been back, what, 2 weeks now?
Three, isn't it? 3 weeks, I think.
Two or 3 weeks. And, I mean, there have been some really big things hanging over from last season that have been sorted, which is Luke O'Neill's contract and Aidan McGeady's contract being sorted out. They're two huge players for Sunderland, I think, and two good contracts to get over the line. We've still got Denver Hume's contract outstanding. There's no news on that. Chris, would you be disappointed to see Denver depart for Pastures New?
Yeah, I would. I think it's a big one. I think, obviously, it doesn't take a genius to look at the squad and know that we need kind of bodies, and especially at the back. But, when he's actually taken to the pitch, he's shown himself to be like a top-end League One player. He's possibly got the potential to move up into the Championship if we get there with us or with someone else. And I guess that's what the delay is, that he's maybe waiting for an offer like that to come in. I was reading early this afternoon, and I think the latest was Lee Johnson saying he was hopeful he was going to sign, but that was before Luke O'Neill signed on the dotted line, and that was the last kind of update I could actually find for Denver Hume. So it's really gone quiet for a good week and a half, 10 days or something like that. So the only slight question mark anybody's got, which might kind of scupper his, if he is looking for a move to the Championship, is, really, I mean, he's only played, or he's only been in the squad as a real kind of first team player for two seasons, and he hasn't really played a full season yet. I mean, you could argue maybe the one that got abandoned was pretty much a full season because it had 2 months left, but last season he had that hamstring injury, so he hasn't proven himself to play a full season yet. So I'll be surprised if Championship clubs take a punt on him and he doesn't sign for us.
Would you be surprised as well, Gav? Because I mean, I've got this thing that you might have looked at someone like George Honeyman, who's come through a couple of years older, probably a good friend and a mentor to someone like Denver Hume, and how his career has progressed since leaving, as you know, upsetting as it was for everyone, especially Rook Report, with Honeyman leaving. He you know, it's been the right choice for his career, hasn't it?
Yeah, I just think that with Denver Hume, when he signed his last contract, he was still a kid. And he'll have been being paid like a kid. He won't have been given a massive bumper contract. I doubt he was even paid a salary in line with, you know, traditional League One wages. And that's got to be a big thing as well, because now he's an established first team player. And is he asking for money that the club aren't prepared to pay? I don't know. It could be that's the sticking point with him. The other thing I was thinking was his injury record, like Chris alluded to, was not great. I mean, how many times did he suffer with a hamstring injury last season? That then puts a bit more power in the club's hand, I think, and maybe makes him less of an appealing product, really, to Championship clubs, because they're going to be looking at him and thinking, well, okay, he's been Sunderland's first choice left back for the last 2 years, but he can't stay fit. Is he worth taking a gamble on? Probably not for a Championship club. I think for a club like us, yes, it'd be great to get him back. So I think that's probably where the issue lies with Denver Hume. Has he got enough power to command a decent salary at this level? And I would probably say at the minute, no. He's actually got to prove himself a little bit more. So to be honest, I see it happening, and I see it happening soon. I said this with Luke O'Neill when he hadn't signed up, that for a player who's quite committed to their craft, it must be upsetting to watch your teammates playing and training, and you're sat at home doing nothing. And at some point, you know, they're going to pull the trigger, they're going to get itchy fingers. And how much longer can Hume really afford to wait? Is he going to wait, you know, for a Championship offer to come around? By which point, you know, it could be 4 or 5 weeks after pre-season started. I mean, we're already 3 weeks in, and he hasn't signed anywhere. So I've got a feeling we'll have a resolution on that one sooner rather than later, because for the player himself, he needs to be playing, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think I agree that he still has something to prove. He definitely has something to prove. I know he's not, you know, he hasn't convinced all Sunderland fans that he's really, you know, going to be good enough for us long term in the first team. So yeah, it must be a task to convince other managers as well across the different divisions.
Seeing that quickly, Rich, I mean, I know, probably a cardboard cutout would have had the same effect, but he did make a difference when he came back in and replaced McFadden. He did kind of make a difference at left back.
He's been linked with several Championship clubs.
Yeah, exactly. But
unbelievable.
When Hume came back in, it was like a breath of fresh air on that left-hand side.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just mention as well, since we're on the subject of shit players getting linked with better moves, how did Remy Matthews get a move to Palace Matthews today? What on earth is going on? Like, I thought
it's just
it was
to meet their quota, though, isn't it?
Well, Jason Steele went to Brighton a couple of years ago, didn't he? And that was something. But I mean, Palace, Jesus Christ, have they watched him? I know that these third choice keepers, they don't get any other first team really, and that's all it is. But I mean, he's got to be the one of the worst keepers we've ever had.
Maybe he isn't an exceptional kind of coach in the background. Who knows? You know, maybe he's done his badges and he's great with the youngsters, or maybe he's knows something about Patrick Vieira's private life that he wants keeping secret.
Yeah, I was reading though that they're like goalkeepers like that are like gold dust though, and they're like English keepers who stays get paid to be third choice because it makes up the quarters of like home based players, doesn't it, in the squad?
Yeah, good point.
I think I'd sit about on a few tens of grand a week playing reserve team games.
Steve Harper springs to mind.
Yeah,
do you reckon he's getting a wage rise out of it or not?
Oh, definitely. I read somewhere about Steve Harper at Newcastle. He was on massive wages because they told him he'd sit on the bench under Shea Given. So they actually gave him a massive contract to say, well, you know, we're paying you extra to sit on the bench.
He just went off to uni, didn't he?
I should have been a goalkeeper. Sit me arse and do note and get paid for it, lovely.
Well, I mean, that's also come up in conversation around Sunderland Football Club recently, the prospect of players sitting on their arses and doing now, because we had Liam Bridcut chirping in on a podcast a couple of days ago, getting Sunderland's backs up by saying that we're destroying our own club by our negativity towards the club, which I don't see how that would happen. He pulled out the erroneous stat that Sunderland were better last season at home than they have been in the previous League One campaigns, which is just not true, because there were no fans there. But he did make a couple of points that I thought were quite valid around the previous drinking culture in the club, which I think is a big thing.
It was weird though, Rich, because he made a good point about that, but then he also slagged Sunderland fans off for not giving those players the time of day and booing them and stuff. And I'm thinking, well,
yeah,
you know, one hand you're saying the professionalism was terrible, but then you're also slagging the fans off for not supporting those same players. I think you're right. I read it quite carefully. I didn't listen to the podcast, but I read the transcript that we put out. And there is a little bit of truth in some of what he said. And, I'll leave people to read it themselves. Some things he says will hurt people. But, I mean, the overarching sort of lies about, you know, booing the team off when we were 0-0 against Man City, that just didn't happen. Saying that the home record last season was better without fans when it was the actual opposite, you know, just clueless. Like, I think somebody whoever was interviewing him clearly caught him on a good day and just probably wasn't expecting Sunderland fans to pick that up. And we're a bunch of nerds who listen to everything, so one of us did, and that was, you know, the rest was history.
Absolutely. What's your perspective on this, Chris? Are you do you have any sympathy with any of the points that you made on that pod?
Well, I mean, on the fans, I mean, I'll take that one. It's just, I mean, what did he expect us to do at the time? You know, we were generally shit. So did he expect us to cheer at every misplaced pass? Did he expect us to, you know, cheer when they missed an open goal? We were negative because we were pretty crap at the time and we weren't getting many results. And it's always said, yeah, your ex-players, when people are in positions like that, when they're in relegation battles or they're playing for a high-profile club, you know, the best get to those clubs and get in those positions because they've got the mentality to do it. And I don't think you'll find there's any club out there who are struggling and it'll not be a negative atmosphere. So I don't know what we were supposed to do.
I mean, there's a half valid point around demands over a particular style of play. Some comments around, you know, how a crunching challenge will get will get a bigger cheer than a beautifully thread through ball. And I think there's an element, there's a kernel of truth in there. I've been sat there when people have gone mad because the ball's gone sideways or backwards. We've just watched a team get to the final of the Euros, prodding and probing and recycling the ball up and down the pitch when they can't get through on one side. Do you think there's some learning that fans can take from what, maybe not from what Brigg could have said, but from maybe what's gone on over the last month in terms of the style of play that we're seeing at the Euros?
What I would say is, you know, we've been talking about the England final there, and in that game, every single big tackle was cheered like a goal, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not a Sunderland thing. I just think English football fans, they like a big tackle, you know? I don't think it's unique to Sunderland at all. I think it's just the football fans love to see big tackles. I mean, like I said, every time Declan Rice went careering through somebody in the Euros final, Wembley went up. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and he said that. I mean, don't get us wrong. I mean, I remember some tackles as much as I do some goals, you know? I mean, I remember a couple from Lorik Sana and Stan Varga and John Kane and all that sort of stuff. I remember them flying in and me cheering them. Like Gav said, everyone does it, you know, all over the country. But I remember under Gus Poyet, especially there was a couple of times, you know, one against Man City, another against Man United, where we had periods of play where we strung about 20, 30 passes together and they almost got a standing ovation. And, you know, the fans absolutely loved it. So, you know, it was only because when they tried that, probably 90% of the time, we ended up giving it away an hour and a half. But when it came off, we loved it.
That's the thing, isn't it? And what Sunderland fans want, we don't necessarily demand a particular style of play. What we need is, what we ask for is commitment. We ask for good football that produces good results. And that could, you know, there's lots of ways to play good football. It doesn't all have to be the most patient build-up play, you know. Getting it down the channels works, and it certainly works in League One.
Used to love a diagonal under Peter Reid.
Absolutely. You know, some wonderful football played by some wonderful footballers down the years at the Stadium of Light, and we've appreciated them. And I do think, you know, it's bang out of order, a lot of what he said. Although, obviously, there's always going to be a kernel of truth in someone who's actually been at the club and played there. They're going to experience things that we wouldn't have. But there was a lot of sour grapes in that. But let's move on from him, shall we? Let's look at, well, the other hot topic amongst fans at the minute is the transfer situation. We've talked about contracts. Sunderland so far, up to the point that we're recording this, have brought in Alex Pritchard, the former Norwich, Tottenham and Huddersfield player. England under 21 international previously, but he's 28 years old. He's had his injury troubles. We've had some mixed feedback, Gav, from some of the fans of other clubs who he's played for.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. The Huddersfield fans aren't high on him at all. I think if people want to go back and check the site from last week, I did a really in-depth interview piece with a Huddersfield fan and a Norwich fan, and two totally different perspectives. I actually think the Huddersfield fan was very fair, because some of the comments that I read from other Huddersfield fans on social media were like, it sounded like they were talking about Jack Rodwell, you know, that's how bad some of the feedback was. And basically Huddersfield, a club who don't traditionally spend a lot of money, spent £11 million on the guy and he never amounted to anything, so you can totally understand it. Mm. But at the same time, and I would say this fairly, I think Huddersfield have been a bit of a basket case the last, three, 4 years, and sort of struggled when they dropped out of the Premier League and spent a lot of money when they were up there. So, you know, I wouldn't put all the blame squarely on him, and that was the feedback that we got in that piece, you know, that, all right, he'd been paid, you know, they paid a lot of money for him and he struggled to stay fit. That was his main problem. It wasn't because he was a bad player. He just struggled to stay fit. And from Sunderland's perspective, really, you've got to look at it and think, well, all right, he's had one bad move in his career, but prior to that, Norwich fans loved him, absolutely adored him. Brentford fans adored him. Like, you know, brilliant player for them. Big prospect when he was even younger again at Spurs, where he was linked with the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona. You know, he's obviously got talent. And I think the fact that 3 years ago a Premier League club paid £11 million for him tells you there's something there. And on a free transfer, it's maybe a risk worth taking. The club have probably looked at it and said, well, he's going to take up a big chunk of our wage budget. And there's that massive sort of thing hanging over where he, he, he's struggled to stay fit at other clubs and actually get into any sort of rhythm and form. But on the, at the same time, you get him playing like he was at Brentford and like he was at Norwich. You've got a top-end championship playmaker, but in League One. And what a difference that would make to this team, because we haven't... I was actually thinking about this. I don't think we've had a proper number 10 since we had Stefan Sessegnon, probably. I can't remember one. You know, it's been a long time since we've had one or played with a proper number 10. And it actually, I think it's a big indicator as to how Lee Johnson's going to play next season, because there's no secret that Pritchard had championship offers. I think Preston were there with an offer. Preston are a decent championship team. But maybe don't give the same guarantees to a player on playing style as we maybe could. So we've probably turned around and said, we're going to play through you. You're going to be number 10 behind the striker. We want to play with the ball on the floor. We want, you know, we want through balls. We want a good wing play, intricate passing around the box. And we need you. We need you as the fulcrum of that. And I think that's probably how we've managed to get him, because he could have played a league above and he hasn't. He's dropped down to play for a team where they're actually going to play it with strength and he can probably rebuild his career. So I think you've sort of got to block out the noise from Huddersfield and try and focus on the fact that, you know, all right, he's had a bad spell, but he could be a very, very, very good player for us if we get everything right, you know, keep him fit, keep him going mentally, Lee Johnson manages him properly. I think we could have a really good player on our hands, and that's a risk worth taking.
If we are going to change our style of play and play that, you know, that kinds of formations that require that kind of number 10 between the lines, Chris, what else are we going to be in the market for? Obviously, there's a lot of people who are very frustrated at the lack of movement, and we might come on to that in a bit, but what do you think we need? And I'll come to you, well, I mean, Gav, you can come in on this as well, because I know you put something out on socials today with a bit of a kind of alternative starting 11, or two alternative starting 11s. But Chris, what do you think we need around that number 10?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think, like Gav says, we haven't brought Pritchard in. Like Gav said again, he alluded to, we haven't gone to the lengths of talking Alex Pritchard into signing for the club over the likes of Preston, over the likes of whatever other championship clubs or whatever other options he had on the table, and told him, you know, this is the club for him. If we were going to get it wide and get it into the box for a big man, that's not going to be the plan. I mean, it might be in our armory with Stewart to do that, but we clearly haven't brought Pritchard in to play the same way as we did last season. And I mean, we've got a few players who can maybe play in that role. You know, I mean, I think Embleton played in an attacking role for Blackpool last year. I mean, Gooch likes to play central, although I think most people will agree his best kind of position is out wide, whether as a wing back or as a midfielder. But yeah, I mean, in terms of what we need, I mean, where do you start? You know, like I said earlier, at the back, we need two right backs. O'Nine's clearly signed on his contract, not as a I'll play anywhere. Lee Johnson's obviously sat down with him and said, we're going to develop you. You're a good player. You've got a good touch. This is how you're going to play it. And he's going to be a fixture in that midfield, and he's going to be a workhorse up and down, box to box, I think. He's not going to be a fullback. He's not going to be a centre-half. Although, actually saying that at the minute, it might be telling whether we do move him to centre-half as we're running out of players in pre-season. But I think that'll tell you everything, that he's probably played in midfield. But yeah, we need fullbacks, need a centre-half, need a left-back, you know, whether Hume signs on. I mean, all over the pitch, really. But what will be interesting is, I think that a number of them will probably come in loan moves. I think we saw the success of Sanderson last year, and I think that with Speakman's knowledge of kind of the youth setups and the academies across the country, I think we'll be identifying a few players who can come here for the year, do what Sanderson did and play at a much higher level, and be fixtures in the first team. I don't think, gone are the days, I hope, of, you know, the can't remember the guy's first name, but was it Sterling what was his name, who signed from Tottenham?
Keziah Sterling?
Yeah, that's it. I don't think we're going to be signing players to sit on the bench if they come on loan. I think they're going to be high-quality loan signings. So yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I've got no issue with that, by the way. I think that's a good thing. Like, other teams seem to do a better job than Sunderland of that. Yeah, last year, we brought in a lot of crap filler, like Danny Graham, Remy Matthews, you know, McFadden. And I sort of wonder, had we just been a bit more imaginative and let, you know, speak to clubs like Man City, Man United, Liverpool, Chelsea, these clubs have got like an array of talented kids and brought in the best of them who are ready to be playing first team football at this level, might we have got promoted, you know? I mean, I know Lincoln didn't get promoted, but Lincoln's star player last year was a loanee from Forest, wasn't he? Brennan Johnson? He's like...
Well, that's it.
Would we ever sign a player like that?
Well, that's it. It doesn't have to be from the Man City's, Liverpool's of the world. Deion Sanderson was one of the best players in the league from Wolves.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, if you'd stuck three or four Deion Sandersons in our team last season, that's automatic promotion.
Yeah.
If we'd had one Deion Sanderson in our team towards the end of the season, we might have had automatic promotion.
That's true.
But it's true. Like, I think sometimes a good young loan, especially when you're a League One team, is better than a journeyman free agent. And I know you touched on what I'd been saying on social media, Rich, before, but this has been the crux of my argument when people are complaining about the length of time it's taken for us to sign players, is that, well, look at who's actually moving around. I mean, they're not world beaters, are they? The players that are signing for the likes of Ipswich and Wigan and whoever else, there's no real upside with them. I mean, we've been there before. We've done this before with players where we've brought them in, you know, and they haven't been able to make an impact because they're not the right player. And what we've been sold with this new era is Sunderland are going to recruit a certain type of player, whether that be, you know, a young hopeful from a Premier League club or our own young talented player from maybe down the leagues or abroad or whatever. And I think people have just got to be patient and let that play out. I think people read too much into, like, I think Johnson probably didn't help himself by coming out and saying that the market was stagnant without getting into any sort of real detail, because to some degree it is stagnant. Like, players aren't moving for big money, and there is a filter down effect from the Premier League where, I don't know, let's just take Sanderson for example. I don't even know if this is the case, but until Wolves sign a centre half, are they going to be willing to let him go? And that's just one example of like many.
He was talking about that. He wasn't talking about the market as a whole. He was talking about the market that we're trying to do. I was dealing in, you know, the likes of Joe Piggott and all that sort of stuff. For me, he's another one of those journeymen who's had a decent season, and everyone thinks he's, you know, a world beater, and he's not.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, if the market starts moving at the top end, where these young players have got someone else ahead of them, like you said, like the Sandersons of the world, that's hopefully who we're going to be making our moves for. So, like I said, in the market that Lee Johnson's looking at, that probably is stagnant because the top clubs aren't busy in the market yet.
But it's not popular to say that, though, is it? It isn't popular to say that, you know, load of shite, Sunderland, you know, they're not doing anything. What they're doing? Why aren't we signing Piggott? I think, well, because we don't want Joe Piggott. Like, just because some clickbait website put an article out 3 weeks ago saying Sunderland want him, and because nobody's turned around and said, hang on, we don't actually want him, then it's just been allowed to stew. And when people say him go to Ipswich, straight away they're like, well, why have Sunderland not signed him? Probably because we didn't want him. Like, you know, look at it. We've got Ross Stewart, who some people might not be convinced by him, but I mean, they like him enough to have spent 350 grand on him. So they haven't signed him for him not to play. Charlie Wyke's gone now. Forget about Charlie Wyke. Like, we've got Ross Stewart. Clearly, they think quite highly of him, or they wouldn't have paid good money for him. And then behind him, you've got, all right, well, Greg, people, and I'm one of his biggest critics, but part of me thinks if we're signing a number 10 and we're bringing Embleton into the fold, does Johnson fancy himself maybe getting something out of Greg and at least wait until the end of August before making a decision on him? And if that's the case, then will we even try and sign a striker before the end of the transfer window? Will it be a case of, see how pre-season goes with Will Greg, see how the start of the season goes, things aren't working out, yep, let him go, bring someone different in? You know, there's so many variables across the board, and that's just one position where I think, you know, they're maybe going to take the time a little bit on it, and we've just got to get used to that idea that maybe the more talented players sort of leave towards the end of the window and not at the start of it.
You could argue at the same time, I mean, just playing devil's advocate, you could argue that, you could say, you know, the argument that, are these just excuses? Well, we're still speculating. We're seeing what we're hoping the club are thinking. But the proof will be where we are before the Wigan game. Whatever squad he's got, that'll be the proof. We're speculating. People are saying, well, that, you know, that's just excuses. Just after hope that the next 3 weeks are going to be as busy as we think they are.
I think there's a lack of trust around the club, which is a hangover from what we've been through for the last 10, 11 years. And it's entirely understandable. And, you know, and even, you know, just the mere fact of Donald and Methven's lawyer being on the board and them still having a shareholding is enough, and kind of really understandably is enough to make people not trust a word that comes out of the club. But that said, it is the case that KLD is in charge of the club. It is the case that Christian Speakman and the recruitment team are the people who are leading this recruitment drive over the summer. And, you know, they've got a job to do to rebuild the trust over this summer, over the next year. But in order to do that, we've got to give them the opportunity to do that. You know, in 2017, I don't know who would have turned around and said England are going to be in the final of the Euros and get the World Cup semi-final the next year, because things hadn't had enough time to develop in that way, and Southgate and his team hadn't had enough time to implement their plans, and yeah, so that building of trust and that kind of, you know, you can only ask for patience from a fan base when that trust's been built up. We've seen it this summer in the Euros. There was trust built up from 2018, that the manager did know what he was doing, that the setup was right. So maybe there's some lessons to be learned there. Finally, we are running out of time really quickly, but finally, we've got three pre-season games coming up. We've got Heart of Midlothian up the course in Edinburgh this coming weekend. Then we've got York City and Tranmere. This is after we played Spennymoor a couple of weeks ago. So, Chris, what's your thoughts on this pre-season programme? Are they a good set of fixtures to kind of build up the kind of understanding that you're going to need to compete in League One from the start?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was looking at this one on Saturday, and it's quite interesting, the timing of this one, because we're still kind of struggling to see what our strategy is and what our formation is going to be next season, what Lee Johnson's going to go with. But this one's going to be tough, because Hearts have already started their campaign, really. They've kicked off with the Scottish League Cup. They beat, somebody the other night.
Oh, Bramblers, is it?
Yeah,
the people. No, that's Ireland, isn't it? Cove Rangers.
Oh, no, that's England. Cove Rangers, sorry. That's Ramblers is in Ireland, yeah.
on they've actually got them this week. But yeah, and they kick off 2 weeks on Saturday against Celtic at home in the SPL. So they're kind of way ahead in terms of their preparation compared to us. I mean, we're probably a good couple of weeks behind them at least where they are. So they're going to be kind of almost in game mode. You know, they're not going to kind of switch it off and then switch it back on for the League Cup. They're going to look at it as a, you know, this is a, you know, winding up to the game against Celtic. So it's interesting timing and where we are, because it's probably, it is our first competitive game in pre-season, because that Spennymoor one was more of a training exercise with different teams in each half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a string, so it's going to be interesting to see how we line up. So I think this first one's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to watching that. And then we've got York City and Tranmere, Gav. Interesting, at National League club York, and then League Two club. So it is stepping up, isn't it? Those two games are kind of ramping up the intensity.
Yeah, and like I said, we'll round off with a Championship team in Hull, so...
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, these games are just for fitness purposes, really. I mean, the more of them you play, the better. Get the players up to match sharpness and get them ready for the season starting, so... I mean, the Spennymoor game was billed as a training game, and it was really. I think it was two different teams, wasn't there? There was a different team in the second half than there was in the first. And I imagine we'll probably see more of the same at the weekend. And I think last weekend, behind closed doors, we played two friendlies. I think, might be wrong, it was either, I think, maybe Gaeta and Carlisle, I think somebody was saying. I think it's sort of been kept quite secretive, but apparently 1-2-0 and Gooch scored both. Might be wrong. But yeah, I don't think you can read too much into these friendly games. I think they're there as a sort of, you could be playing anybody, which is when people start sort of worry about the opposition that we're playing and things. I think, well, you know, we could play like a League One standard team in Portugal. It makes no difference really.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's just getting the legs into the minutes and getting people up to speed, and that's the main thing. Especially when you've got like Luke O'Neill who's joined pre-season training later than the rest, and Pritchard's probably not been training, so that them two will be on the same page, you would imagine, in terms of where they're at. And you've also got, the one thing we haven't really talked about is we don't have a first team right back as of recording. We don't have a first team left back. So does that then mean that we bring in the under 23 equivalent and give them a chance, you know, more of a run up? I think in the Spennymoor game, it was the second half was a full team of 23s players and under 18s, but I think if you can get maybe like Ethan Cachosa, who's just signed from Leeds, involved, mm-hmm. he's a right back, you know, we don't have a right back at the minute. Could be an opportunity for him to show Lee Johnson what he can do, you know, and you never know. There's quite often these things happen where a young player gets a chance and they grasp it with both hands and end up, you know, doing a lot better out of it and maybe even starting the season. I don't know if that's a possibility with him, but you know, why not? I would love nothing more than to see like 2, 3, 4 young players sort of break through in pre-season and prove their worth. And I think they're not going to get a better opportunity right now because the squad's quite, you know, weak in terms of numbers.
Just quickly on that, I mean, you mentioned that, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. You know, usually it doesn't matter who we're playing generally, and it's going to be the case for this pre-season in a sense. But in the friendlies, I would like to start seeing how Johnson wants us to play. I mean, you know, our tactics were obvious last season, and I think Johnson tried to make do with what he had in terms of getting it wide, getting it into the box, because those were the tools he had. But it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, this is his first summer. I want to see him putting his stamp on how we're going to play. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether it's possession-based, whether it's counter, whether it's, you know, whatever it's going to be. I'd like to start seeing what we're going to be going into next season with in terms of style of play.
Well, I think that's a really apt place to leave it. Looking forward to next season, hoping that we get some young players breaking in during these friendlies we've got coming up. Hopefully, if you can do, listeners, you can be able to get to some of the games. Hull City at home, won't be restrictions in England then, will there, lads? So
No.
Maybe we'll be able to pack as many in there as we can. I'll try and get along to Tranmere as well, just along the coast from here. So thanks a lot for your time this evening, Chris.
No bother. Cheers, Rich.
And it was nice to speak to you again, Gav.
Cheers, mate, yeah. Let's hope Sunderland just give us something to cheer about.
Absolutely. I'm sure they will. Be optimistic.
Why not?
No, it should be a good season ahead. So keep listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you very soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.